these verses are just giving examples of Krishna and great things, and how those great things should remind us of Krishna. Because he's the greatest. So, in any field, the greatest thing that represents Krishna. So even if we see a great materialist or a big movie star or something that's currently the most famous or the most beautiful, that represents Krishna, because he's actually the most beautiful, the most famous, and the most wealthy. Right? They have magazines for the most beautiful and the most rich, and, but they don't put Krishna. Then it would be the same winner every time. So among the Daitya demons, I am the devoted Prahlad. Among subduers, I am Time. Among beasts, I am the lion. And among birds, I am Garuda. So if you know, Prahlad is a great devotee. He was a young boy, and his father was the biggest demon, and Lord Nrsingadev there killed his father, because his father was harassing his own son, just because he was a devotee. Among wielders of weapon, or among subduers, is time. Time is the most powerful force in the mature world. And in due course of time, even big mountains are finished, big kingdoms, so many nations have come and gone. Right? Nothing can last too long. No dynasty can last a certain amount of time. Everything has its allotted time, and nobody can stop time. Time is Krishna. Krishna says, I am time. And he's here. Time makes everybody get to work. Everybody's running. We go out to try to talk to people, and most of them are in a hurry. They're late for something, and they think that, right? Time. Have to go. So they're really thinking of Krishna, but they don't know. We're trying to give them, you know, the real thing. And, no, I don't have time. Unfortunate. Among beasts, the lion is considered the king of beasts. Everybody knows that. King of the jungle. And among birds, Garuda is a carrier of Vishnu, and he's almost as powerful as Vishnu, but not as powerful. There's even a story one time Garuda was getting very proud. He's the carrier of Vishnu, and so Vishnu said, can I rest my arm on your neck? And then the arm got heavier and heavier and heavier, and even the most powerful Garuda got crushed out of the ground, and he realized that he was not as great as Vishnu. But in his activities, he can act almost the same. Of purifiers, I'm the wind. The wind, you know, if there's a very strong wind, then afterward everything is all cleaned up. Right? It blows away all the bad smell and all the dirt and all that. If the wind is too strong, of course, it's very destructive. Among wielders of weapons, I am Rama. That means Lord Ramachandra. He was a master of all weapons. And of fishes, a shark. Everyone's heard about the sharks. There's no fish like the shark. Huge thing and very powerful. And of flowing rivers, he's the Ganges. Everyone's heard about the Ganges, the Ganga. That's a spiritual river. It's very big, also very long, goes all the way across India. And the unique feature of the Ganges is that, of course, it's worshipped its goddess Ganga. But the Ganga is, the water is antiseptic. And it's mysterious. The scientists, they don't like to think about it even. They've experimented. You can take water from the Ganges and put it in a bottle, and 20 years later it's still all right. But even if you buy the water in the bottle here, that's gone through so much of a process of ozonization and reverse osmosis and infrared and all the things, and still it says used before 1 year or 6 months. And they've even put germs into the Ganges water. But in a short time, the germs are gone. In other water, they take out all the germs and leave it, and it fills up again with germs. So they make different theories, but it's the spiritual quality of the Ganga. And it's also spiritually purifying. Lord Chaitanya said, even to hear the name of the Ganga or to feel the wind blowing across the Ganga, you can get love of God. It's very special. So like if you go to Mayapur, that's right on the bank of the Ganga. It's interesting because there's a science in India called Vastu. It's like Feng Shui. It's the original, you know. Or you may say Feng Shui. Chinese say Feng Shui. So it's a science of, you know, what, where to put the different parts of the house, which direction to do things. The Vastu is the original science. It's spiritual. So there's rules about the river being on different directions and flowing in different directions as good or bad. So different people were consulting our temple builders, and they were saying, well, the river is inauspicious. It's on the wrong side or something. So it was bewildering because you can't move the Ganga, you can't move the property. But then a very senior, more advanced Vastu expert came and said, well, the Ganges, it doesn't matter where it is, it's always good. Any, it doesn't matter, you know, it's good. So then we were relieved. It's all auspicious, and the BBC did a very nice documentary you might be able to find in the shop on the Ganga. They started from the beginning and went all the way down. They didn't stress too much on the spiritual side, but how the Ganga is supporting, you know, all the life along it for so far. Beautiful photography. So even seeing the Ganga is, you know, we also have a video our devotees made. It shows more different spiritual activities along the Ganga. Beautiful photography. If you take bath in the Ganga, you get relieved of all sins. Interesting river. When the Ganga flowed before, only on the heavenly planets. Actually, it comes from the Goloka Vrindavan. Somehow it comes into the universe. And one king, his sons were killed, and they wanted to purify the ashes of the sons so they could be liberated. And for many, many generations, different kings were trying to get the Ganga to come to her. Finally, one king did so much tapasya, and he got up to heaven where the Ganga, he could meet Ganga Devi. And he was begging her, you have to come to earth and go to where his ancestors are buried. She said, I'm not going to go to earth. I won't go there. Because if I go there, all kinds of sinful people come and take bath to try to get rid of their sins. And then I'll get, she said, I'll get contaminated from all these people dumping their sins. Because people do that. And you know, they just go to the Ganga and they think I'll dump all my sins there. And then, but they don't take advantage of the spiritual atmosphere. So he convinced her that also great devotees and sages would come there and chant the holy name, and that would purify her. So she agreed. So to come down to earth, you know, heavy force of this river hitting. So they had to get Lord Shiva. Sometimes you see pictures of Lord Shiva with the water. So that he had his hair wound up and Ganga landed on his head, and then he, if that absorbed the whole blow of the Ganga, otherwise she would have blown the earth apart. And then she flows down from way in the Himalaya all the way across India and is sustaining the life along the way of so many different things, jungles, farmers, you know, fishermen. So many people live by the Ganga. So recommended to see it. Next verse says, of all of creation, I am the beginning and the end and the middle. Sarganam Adir Ancha Majum Cha. Krishna is the beginning, the middle, and the end of everything. And the name of Krishna, chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. That is the beginning, middle, and end of our spiritual practices. You never finish. It's not just for, sometimes people think, well, that's for the beginners. I'll advance into some higher meditation. But it's the highest thing. But it's the same practice all along. Of all sciences, I'm the spiritual science of the self. So we have that book, Science of Self-Realization, you know, we're trying to give people. One guy said, I'm self-realized. I said, well, who are you? He said, I'm a me, you're you. What does that mean? I'm me and you are you. I'm self-realized. So what is yourself? What is me? I don't know. Get out of here. You know, I'm in a hurry. I got to go to the pub. Right? The people in the pub will think I'm speaking very brilliantly. And they say things like that. Right? The other drunken people say, oh, very nice. Genius. Then, and among logicians, I'm the conclusive truth. And logicians, there are different kinds of argument. Supporting one's argument with evidence, but also supports the opposing side, is called jalpa. Merely trying to defeat one's opponent is called tunda. But the actual conclusion is called vada. The conclusive truth represents Krishna. Tattvavada means a conclusive understanding of what thing is what. Otherwise, logicians, they just argue and they take great pleasure in arguing. And they have all kinds of arguments, just like some sport or something, to bewilder the mind of the other side so that they can't answer their question or they can't defeat their argument. And sometimes the person who doesn't know very much about spiritual things, but he's very good at arguing, he can bewilder a neophyte devotee whose faith is weak, because they can make such arguments that you... There's many atheists that are doing that, writing books now. One of them is one of your countrymen. His book's called The God Delusion. He's on the radio a lot. Thinks he's, you know, really the most highest authority that there's no God. And I just heard there some of these people, they're paying for to put an ad on the buses or something, and it's going to say, probably there's no God, so live your life, do whatever you want. But they put probably. So Krishna tricked them, because probably means probably not, probably yes, right? Could be this, could be that, maybe this, maybe that. Some reason or other they decided to do it like that. But they like to make all kinds of arguments. And a person who doesn't know anything about science or anything about the scripture may get bewildered by the arguments, because the words are very tricky. Sounds good. People that know the science that they're talking about or the scripture see through it very easily. They have real knowledge. So that's Krishna, the real truth, Tattvavada. And of letters, I am the letter A, and among compound words, I am the dual compound. So that's like a grammatical thing that we probably can't understand. Akshara is the first letter of Sanskrit, is the beginning of the Vedic literature, because Om starts with that. can't talk without that. It's the beginning of sound. There are many compound words which the dual word, like Ramakrishna, is called Dwanda. Like Rama and Krishna have the same form, therefore the compound is called dual. And among subduers, I am inexhaustible time. Again, time destroys everything. And then among creators is Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma, of course, creates the whole universe. I'm all-devouring death. Richu, Sarva, Harascha, Hum. Prabhupada said when a devotee sees death coming, he thinks here comes Krishna. Not afraid. He sees Krishna. Different. The example is like the mouse and the kitten. When the kitten sees the mouth of the mother cat, he feels very happy and secure, and the mother cat will, because they see the little kittens, they walk away and then they get tired, they can't walk back, and the mother comes and drags them back by the neck. But they have, she doesn't pierce the skin, she doesn't hurt them. So for them, that mouth of the mother cat is rescue. But for the mouse, it's different. If you've ever seen the cat get a mouse, they pick it up and, you know, but they don't kill it so quick. They're quite cruel, you know. Let it go a little bit, then they slap it around and they pick it up again, and finally. So, for the devotee, death is Krishna. Welcomes it when it comes, because can't stop it. And it's Krishna. He's feeling embraced by Krishna and taken back to Godhead. For the demon, death is very fearful. They see Krishna, but they don't, they see death. They see the other aspect of Krishna. Fearful. And they have no idea where they're going to go. And they see the Yamadutas and they're freaking out. There's a difference. And I am the generating principle of all that is yet to be. So he's death, but he's also the life-giving force. Everything is Krishna. And death means birth. Birth means death. In the second chapter, Krishna says, for one who is born, death is certain. And for one who is dead, birth is certain. So a devotee is not very upset about death, and he's not very excited about birth, because there's not that much difference. Among women, I am fame, fortune, fine speech, memory, intelligence, steadfastness, and patience. So those are considered feminine qualities. Of course, a man should have those qualities also. But those are qualities that women more naturally have. So they're considered feminine qualities. Everyone has both sides. But today in Kali Yuga, some men become almost completely feminine. Many women try to be just like men. And they lose these qualities. But those are among women. Those are the good qualities of a woman. Good fortune. In Vedic culture, the wife, when she comes into the home, is considered the goddess of fortune. And when a man gets a wife, because it brings all good fortune in the home, where the wife is treated nicely, then there'll be all good fortune. To the Vedas. Fine speech, women are usually can speak very nicely. They have a good memory. If a person has all of these qualities, it becomes glorious. If a man is famous as a righteous man, that makes him glorious. Sanskrit is a perfect language and is therefore very glorious. If after studying, Sanskrit is, computer people said if a computer had to learn a language, the only language a computer could learn is Sanskrit. the only language that's very precise. Other languages have so many variables, especially English. Right? Anybody here speak English as a second language? When I was first in Japan, and you know, they would say English is so hard, and I couldn't understand why they're saying that. It's so easy, you know, especially if you grow up with it. But then I started looking at it, you know, because I was kind of teaching, and I thought it's like Japanese. In Japanese, they have all these, you know, the picture writing. So the same sound will have many different pictures, and each one has a completely different meaning. So when they're speaking, sometimes it's very confusing. They have to figure out, like, usually they can figure out by the, you know, the sentence, but and then they have to memorize all those pictures, thousands of them. But English too, you got, you know, the same letter will be pronounced different in different words. The same combination of letters, or they have silent letters, and they have, you know, all these different things. So someone has to, you know, have to learn that. You have to figure that out. And the other languages either use the same alphabet or more consistent. Sanskrit is always consistent. To Hindi, all those, you know, ka ki ku ke, ka ka ki ki. Right? Ku ku. So, Japanese has similar kaki kukeko, ravi rubebo, sashi shushesho. They don't have just a consonant without a vowel. So, it's a precise language. Of all the hymns, I'm Samaveda, that's the original. Of all the hymns in the Samaveda, he's the Brihat Sama. The Samaveda is the original Veda. Originally there was only one. Vyasa divided it into four to make it more simple. And then the Brihat Sama is the chief one of that. Among poetry is a Gayatri. It's a short poem. Among months, I'm Marga, November, December. Now that's in India. It was a very nice time in India. I don't know if in this part of the world we call that the nicest time of year. And spring. Because in spring all the flowers come. And spring, everyone loves springtime. Right? Gets the winter is over. Of course, everything is relative. I'm still bewildered by thinking back on my childhood. Because now if it's like 5 above 0 or something, I start to panic that it's too cold. But when I was young and I lived in Minnesota, when it got up in March up to 5 above 0, we thought, wow, this is springtime, you know. Go barefoot in the snow and wear a t-shirt and, you know, this is ecstasy. And it suddenly, because before that it was 30 below zero for a couple of months, 20 below zero. But it's all relative, what you get used to. Even now, some of us are out there with so many heavy clothes on, and others are in t-shirts and sweating. Right? It's all relative. The same, they're standing in right next to you, and so the thermometer is not different. But the way they perceive it is different. So Krishna is saying, Shitoshna Sukadukada, you know, Agamo, Payanonya, Chastam, that it's all mental. It's all just relative. What I think is hot, you think is cold. What, you know, what I think is beautiful, you think is ugly. You know, everyone, it's all relative according to one's mentality in the material world. So Krishna says you should tolerate. Don't get too excited about all the differences, because it changes all the time. And our own perceptions change. I've seen it even in Japan. I notice everything over there. But it has a fairly harsh winter and a quite hot summer. Something like here, probably. But So there's air conditioner in the temple room. One of those that's a heater and air conditioner. So in the winter, if it gets down to 21 or something, they turn it up to 29. But in the summer, if it gets up to 29, they turn it down to 21. Can't tolerate the 29 in the summer, but you can't tolerate. But in the winter, you want it. So, and everywhere is like that. Yeah. So, it's all relative. So we learn to tolerate and be a little more steady. We have to adjust things so we can live comfortably, but we don't want to be too excited about, you know, changes in the weather, you know, mold our whole consciousness. We see, like, people, if it's bad weather, people get really upset. It's good, you know, naturally that affects us. You can't let that rule your life. I'm also the gambling of the cheats. There are many kinds of cheaters all over the universe. Of all cheating processes, gambling stands supreme, therefore represents Krishna. As the supreme, Krishna can be more deceitful than any mere man. If Krishna chooses to deceive a person, no one can surpass him in his deceit. The greatness is not simply one-sided. It's all-sided. Like Hiranyakasipu. He was very intelligent. Of course, it was Lord Brahma, but that's Krishna bewildering his intelligence. So he thought, he did his tapasya, and Lord Brahma came and said, "What do you want?" He said, "I want to live forever. I never die." And Brahma said, "I can't give you that benediction because I'll die myself." So he said, "All right, I'll never die in the daytime. Okay. I'll never die at night. All right. I'll never die inside the house. Okay. I'll never die outside. It's okay. I'll never be killed by any animal or any weapon or any man. Okay. All right. Fine. No problem." So finally he thought, "Okay, I've covered everything. I'll never die." But then when he encountered Krishna, he came as a half man and half lion. So it wasn't a man, it was an animal. He killed him at the twilight. So it wasn't day, it wasn't night. Killed him in the doorway. So it wasn't in, it wasn't out. He covered everything. There was another, two brothers. They were descendants of Hiranyakasipu. And they did also great tapasya. So they wanted also, they asked for the benediction that they could never die. He said, "We can't do that." So they said, "Okay, we'll only die if we kill each other." And they were twin brothers who did everything together. If you ask them a question, they'd both answer at the same time. They ate together. They never had any quarrel. They were always perfectly, you know, nice. So they conquered the universe. They couldn't be killed, and they were, you know, making so much trouble. So then Lord Brahma, he created one beautiful woman, just like all beauty, put everything into this one woman. It was just totally attractive. And she said, "What would you like me to do?" She said, he said, "Go and, you know, bewilder these guys." So she came by, you know, exhibiting all her charm. And the one brother went, "Oh, there is a wife for me that I've been waiting for." And the other one said, "No, I saw her first. It's mine." And they started fighting and they killed each other. So Krishna is a little bit smarter. Can't outsmart Krishna, can't cheat Krishna. We're all thinking, "I can hide something from Krishna, you know, I'll just make a show that I'm actually a devotee, but, you know, nobody knows what's really going on. I'll just keep a little bit for myself here, just in case." But Krishna knows everything. So when we finally realize that and we just say, "All right, you know, everything for Krishna," then we get completely liberated. And of the splendid, I am the splendor. I am victory. I am adventure. And I am the strength of the strong. So all these things represent Krishna. Krishna is the ability in man. You know, so if you see someone that's extremely talented or something, extremely rich, powerful, you know, they're representing Krishna, actually, because it should remind us, a devotee will be reminded of Krishna, that he's really the real way is Krishna. That these people are given a little bit of Krishna's opulences, and they're thinking it's all mine. So they may be winning all the football games or whatever for a while, right? But they're just empowered by Krishna for some reason. They did some tapasya or some piety in their past life. So Bhagavad Gita, you can see, is very interesting, and it has mystic potency that if we just keep reading it, we get closer and closer to Krishna. That's how we get close to Krishna. The Bhagavad Gita is Krishna speaking. So by hearing Krishna and reading Bhagavad Gita, we're associating with Krishna. Then gradually we'll get to really know Krishna. He'll reveal himself more and more. The more we try to serve Krishna, serve the devotees, you know, and do things. So I want to thank you very much. I have to go up in a minute.